time, we'll call the meeting of the Agriculture and Rural Economies Committee meeting for today, Thursday, April 29th, to order. Just review the agenda a little bit. We'll start out with Senator Marty's bill, and then we've got some confirmations that we should do. I believe when the Senate is requested to do confirmations, we should do those. And then we'll have, including the Commissioner of Agriculture, and then we'll have Senate File 1324, which is a bill we need to work through to before we adjourn this year of the session, to work through some of the issues here that have come up with the Department of Agriculture, and myself and some other members have been working hard with the department and our staff and their staff to get this bill in the shape we need to get it in to get some things done. And we'll get into that as we go later on. So that's the agenda to today. So we'll start out with our friend Senator Marty. Welcome to the Ag Committee, Senator Marty, with Senate File 705. And Senator Kubley, would you like to move the bill? And the motion, Senator Kubley, would be we'll go to finance with the bill.
All right. Well, Mr. Chair, I would introduce Senate File number 705, recommending it to pass and be referred to finance.
Thank you, Senator Kubley. Welcome, Senator Marty.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And we do have an A1 amendment to the bill, a delete everything A1 amendment. I don't know if that's in packets or not.
It is.
Okay. And while I'd like to first thank your staff and you and Mr. Knopf and the Department of Ag and Board of Animal Health for helping with the input on this, I think it accomplishes what we wanted to do in a much simpler way. Basically, this bill would repeal pound seizure, which has been in place since I think 1949 in Minnesota, and prior to that time there was a lot of problems with people dog napping and other things, taking other pets and other animals for and selling them for research purposes, and the state figured it was smarter to use pound animals, and so after I believe 5 days in the pound they were turned over to somebody for research. This is a concern for a lot of people whose pets are members of their family, and the idea that they might be used for research. Now, as far as we know, nobody's doing this. Matter of fact, there are two licensed institutions who pay a $50 license fee, Argosy University and University of Minnesota, neither of whom use any animals from pounds for research. They have breed animals specifically for research. And so what we're doing is this bill with the Delete Everything Amendment would, instead of amending Chapter 35.71, would be repealing that and moving the remaining provisions of how pounds are supposed to deal with animals and how they deal with them, how they keep track of them, moving that into Chapter 346. And then instead of the language in the existing law and the repeal or language, you can see after 5 days they are turned at the end of a five-day period. Animals which remain unredeemed must be available to a licensed institution for research. Instead of that, Subdivision 3 of the A1 amendment would say that they can't be used for research or product testing, and that's basically it. Again, we have, I think, Marty McDonough from the University of Minnesota is here to indicate they don't have any problem with this. Argosy does not do research on them. They will spay and neuter pets to train their students and so on. But with that, I have Mr. Goldman from the...
Okay, before we do that, Senator Marty, I will declare we do have a quorum. Senator Kubley moves the A1 amendment, and you've discussed that somewhat. We do have information in your packets, members, dealing with Senate Counsel's information here on disposition of certain animals, the description of the bill, and then also you have some other information on repeal of the pound seizure in Minnesota. So... You have that information at your disposal, members, and we have the A1 amendment before us. So with that, Mr. Goldman, our friend, how are you today? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's nice to be here. I want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, personally for scheduling a hearing on this bill. This is an important issue to our members in the state. I'm the Minnesota State Director for the Humane Society of the United States. And as Senator Marty said, the purpose of this bill is simply to protect pets It will not affect medical research in any way. University will continue to procure purpose-bred animals for the purposes of research. We've asked a representative from the university, as Senator Marty said, Martin McDonough, who's here, who can answer any questions you might have about that. The university does not oppose the bill, and that's a position they've taken publicly now on it. There's only two states in the country that currently have pound seizure laws, Minnesota and Oklahoma. And we're hoping, of course, that after this hearing, there'll be just one state, Oklahoma. This bill has widespread support in the animal welfare community. The Minnesota Animal Control Association supports passage of the bill. The Minnesota Humane Society, the Animal Humane Society, which is the largest shelter in the state, the Duluth Humane Society as well. I have two testifiers here today. One, the directors from the Minneapolis Animal Care and Control Department, and also the director from the St. Paul Animal Care and Control Department. They'd each like to make brief statements to the committee. There is a sign at the St. Paul pound which states that once your animal is turned over to the pound, there is a possibility upon request it may be used for research. Needless to say, we'd like to see that sign taken down. We'd like to see this law taken off the books. Let me introduce Dana Jolik, who is the director of the Minneapolis Animal Care and Control. We'll make our remarks brief. We know you have a very busy schedule today. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Goldman. Are there any questions? Of course, I'd be.
We could have your other testifiers come up as they wished. Mr. Nizolik from the Minneapolis Animal Care Department. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record or for the tape and tell us your thoughts, please.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dan Ishelik, manager of Minneapolis Animal Care and Control. I'll make my comments brief. First of all, I'll mention that on September of 1989, the City Council of the City of Minneapolis went on record as opposing the release of animals from Minneapolis Animal Care and Control for the purposes of research. And to my knowledge, over the past 10-plus years, we have not received a request from a facility for an animal for research. Those are my comments. I'll keep them brief. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mizolik. Yes, sir. Mr. Stevenson?
Yes, sir. Bill Stevenson. I'm the supervisor at the St. Paul Animal Control Center. And I'd like to briefly state that I would also like to see that sign come down in my facility. The only reason it's up there is it is still a law. And we inform the public of that. Some of the public does take opposition to it and really question us on it. And as well, I believe it was 1997 the last time that our facility had a request for or turned over any animals to a research facility.
Okay, thank you, sir. Any questions of the witnesses? Maybe if Mr. McDonald's here from the U of M, we could have him. Marty, would you tell us, identify yourself for the tape, Marty, and tell us what the U's plans are.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Marty McDonough from the University of Minnesota. Our position has been stated by these gentlemen. It is correct that the university is not opposed to this legislation, and in fact, it may have been upwards of 10 years since we've used these provisions. So,
okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. McDonough. Any questions, McDonough? Any questions of Senator Marty? Any more to discussion on the bill as amended? And again, we're sending this to finance. We have a fiscal note that finance committee has requested, and so with that, that's pending. So we'll send it to finance. That does not mean that it will be dead. There's really no deadlines for the finance committee, so it'll continue on there. And when we get the fiscal note completed, we'll have that. Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank Senator Marty for actually bringing this legislation. This is important to a lot of folks in my district. It's important to me as a animal lover myself, and I was surprised actually to find out that we still had that archaic law in the books. So thank you for helping us clean it up.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you too, Senator Murray. I think it's good. And I don't know if anybody's moved this. Are you laying it over? Or
no, we're sending it to the. We have the motion in front of us to send the bill as amended to the Finance Committee.
Okay.
because we are we have fiscal note coming. We are repealing a licensing provision, and that's been going to the general fund, and there's some other issues. So.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll second the motion. Thank you, Senator Marty, for bringing this forward.
Okay. Anyone else wish to testify for or against the bill as amended? Any other members wish to testify? If not, we do need to adopt the amendment, I guess. We had Senator Kubley move the adoptment. We need to approve the amendment first. So all those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, nay. Amendment carries. Okay, now we have before us the bill as amended. So Senator Stumpf?
Mr. Chairman, just a question. Why is it going to finance?
Because we are taking out a licensing provision in there. That money had been going to the general fund, and there is going to be finance is asked to see the bill. So if they ask us, we'll do that. Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, there are only two license holders, and it's a $50 annual fee, so it's $100. But it does have to go to finance.
So Senator Rosen.
So with that, then, if I will move that Senate File 705. Be recommended to pass and sent to finance.
All right. Okay. Thank you, Senator Rosen. Okay. All those in favor of sending the Senate File 705 as amended to the Finance Committee, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Thank you very
much, Senator
Marty. Thank
you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Thank you. Okay. Now, members, you have in your packets information on our confirmation of two entities. First, the Minnesota Rural Finance Authority appointees, Theodore Brenny from Mazeppa, Minnesota. And if anyone is here, if any of the confirmees are here, we certainly wish you to speak. Okay. Commissioner Borboom, would you like to speak to the confirmees?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, for the record, I'm Jim Borboom, Deputy Commissioner with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Very briefly, these two individuals bring great talent and skill to the board of the Rural Finance Authority. Ted Brenny is an agriculture loan officer at a community bank, and Sarah Kern is a Farm Service Agency director, I believe, in Benson County. And so I'm very pleased that we can attract this type of talent to the board.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Borboom. Any discussion? If not, our motion would be that we recommend confirmation to the full Senate. So that would be our Senator Saxog makes that motion. All right. All those in favor of said motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. All right. Those names will be sent on to the Senate. Now we have one other entity here, the friends from the Board of Animal Health, and I know we have at least one of our friends here to visit with us about it. So, Dr. Hartman, how are you today?
I'm great. Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Bill Hartman. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Animal Health. And the first thing I wanted to do is just thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the committee for all you've done to support the Board of Animal Health over the last few years. You helped us tremendously in our effort to get rid of TB, so thank you. What we're here to do is confirm three out of the five members of our board. So just to remind you, the Board of Animal Health has five members. Two of them are veterinarians and three of them are livestock producers. And that contingent, the three that we're here to confirm are livestock producers, and that input that we get from people that are actively farming in Minnesota is crucial to our ability to run the Board of Animal Health. And with me today is Dean Compart, and I'll start with Dean and let Dean talk to you about why he wanted to be part of the Board of Animal Health.
Welcome to the committee today, Mr. Compart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'm surprised you're not in the field planting
crops. You haven't been south.
No, I know.
It'll be probably a week if we get cooperation. So, yeah. But Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, it would be I consider this to be a real honor and a privilege to have an opportunity to serve on a board such as the Minnesota Board of Animal Health. to a little background information as far as myself. Myself and two brothers, along with my parents, are involved in a family-owned and operated swine breeding stock business located in Nicollet County. Our address is Nicollet in South Central Minnesota. We've been involved with this for 60 years, and I represent a third. I and my two brothers represent a third generation involved in this way of life. We have different farming and business structures in different parts of the state, primarily through South Central Minnesota, and have tried to locate and isolate ourselves into some lowly populated hog areas so as to try to buffer against the potential disease risks that go along with the swine industry. What we're involved in, we raise purebred Duroc, York, and Landrace breeding stock. We are one of the larger suppliers of specific pathogen-free or very high health breeding stock in the country. We are also one of the large participants in the National Swine Registry's performance testing program, where we have had a number of the national trait leaders for various economically important characteristics and traits in the swine industry. And so we really guard our genetics, and health is something that we really take quite seriously. Our primary customers are people throughout Minnesota, upper Midwest, and we do sell throughout the country. This coming week, we're going to have a group of a group from China that are going to be in making selections as well. And so it's been 2 years, was it April, I guess, when H1N1 was, and that whole thing happened, and it really damaged our industry, the swine industry, a great deal. And they're coming back in to buy some much-needed genetics, and we hope to be part of that. And so we're very familiar with intrastate, interstate, and the movement of swine internationally. And yeah, it's very important to us. And so, like I said, I look forward to serving on this committee, and we consider quite an honor.
Any questions of Mr. Compart? I just want to say for the record, Dean, that you and your family have been a tremendous resource for Minnesota agriculture.
Thank you. Thank you.
I know you're not only nationally known, but internationally known. And
thank you.
And really have a great reputation. I'm really pleased to see you willing to step up and serve on the Animal Health Board.
Thank you.
That's great. You've been a great asset for us. So, any other discussions? If not, members will again take the full slate if no one has an exception to that. So our motion would be to recommend confirmation to the full Senate of the names that you have before you, Steve Brake, Dean Compart, and Paul Hanowski. So Senator Scoy.
I'd be happy to make that motion,
Thank you,
Mr.
Senator
Chair.
Scoy. Okay. The motion's before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of said motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Dr. Hartman, I saw a disturbing news release, the other an article that another state has had a bovine TB outbreak. So thanks again for your work, the board's work, and Minnesota Department of Agriculture's work here in the state. But continues to be a battle nationwide. So I was disappointed to see that. I don't remember what state it was. It was in California, or what state was it?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. It was California. And California has had an ongoing battle with it in its dairy industry. And when it's in California, it's usually in a herd that's 5,000-plus cows. So it's a big problem for them to deal with. And we're happy to be in the position we are today now.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Hartman. Next, we have a confirmation scheduled here for the Agriculture Commissioner, our friend Dave Fredrickson. Commissioner?
why does that bring laughter?
Commissioner, you served in the Senate in the previous year, so could you tell us a little bit about your history?
Mr. Chairman and members, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here today in this unique position that I find myself in after so many years. I think I gave you some background the last time I was here. I was trained as a teacher, went home to the farm in 1974 when my father's health failed. My wife Kay and I have farmed there for 24 years in the process, involved myself with the legislature for a couple of terms, I spent 11 years, 10 and a half years as president of Minnesota Farmers Union, continuing to farm two terms as president of the National Farmers Union, living here and in Colorado and D.C., and having ample opportunity to involve myself with a variety of state and federal issues. And then the past 4 years serving as Senator Klobuchar's ag outreach. And, of course, in December, Governor Dayton called, Governor-elect Dayton called and asked if I'd be willing to serve as his Commissioner of Agriculture, and I was extremely pleased and proud to say yes. And let me also say that the past four months have been they've been very busy understanding the nuances of the department, but I'm so proud to be able to represent Minnesota farmers and ranchers as their commissioner and represent them at the Department of Agriculture. We have 404 people that are the best there is. I'm so proud to have Dr. Hartman just down one floor and down the hall, and the great work that the Board of Animal Health has done. Bill informed me that he was the only one in the building that that doesn't work for me, and so he reminded me of that early on. But I'm so pleased and proud of the great work that they have done. I suppose over my career in agriculture, all of the smart aleck remarks that I've made to a variety of folks around the walls will probably come back to haunt me probably today. But I'm ready for that.
I've got a long list.
All right. And again, thank you very much for the opportunity to be here today, and I stand for certainly any questions, Mr. Chairman, that you might have.
Any questions?
With the exception of Leroy Stump, the senator, he cannot ask any questions. He's the only leftover, the one that I used to serve with.
Boy, Leroy, you've been here a long time, too. any questions of the commissioner? And Commissioner, how do you see the department moving ahead? We've got our bill done, and I want to thank you very much, Commissioner, for your help and your agency's help in the bill done. And how do you think it's moving ahead here now for the next?
Well, again, my congratulations to Mr. Chairman and Chairman Hamilton on the House side that worked so well with the governor's office and certainly our office as we move through that dance, I guess, to bring a bill through the process and bring it all the way through to the signing. The governor was very pleased and very proud and thankful for the work that you all put in on what I like to call a nonpartisan bill. That's the history of the committee, and I'm happy to say that it obviously continues to be the history of the committee. Obviously, we're working at a time with, diminishing resources, and so we're going to be asked to do more with less, and we understand that. And we've already moved in that direction prior, actually, even to the passage of the department bill. I still think that agriculture obviously has a great future in Minnesota. I want our department to pay attention to all forms and structures of agriculture. I think the diversity we have in Minnesota is our strong point and not our weak point. And so we have organic producers, we have sustainable growers, we have traditional farmers all across the state, and I think that indeed is our strength. I think also one of the roles that the department, as I see a future role, would be to continue the good work in developing more markets for products. I know you, Mr. Chairman, have worked hard in that regard with your work with the American Soybean Association. I hope to continue that work. We just had a brief presentation, a little brown bag lunch. Su Yi, who has just returned from China, she's our chief economist and our Chinese specialist, and talked about the products that we sell, the booming market that is occurring in China today, and our soybeans go there either for crush or soybean meal, and how that has jumped in the last 10 years from literally zero to something over 60% of our production here in Minnesota. So I see great opportunity for us there. I see also an opportunity, I think, to bring the message of Minnesota agriculture to this large population area here in the Twin Cities. I like the idea of doing outreach in Minneapolis-St. Paul schools, making sure that the kids certainly understand where their food comes from. And thank you for the opportunity for us to move ahead with a curriculum development person. You included that in the bill, and that's so important, so key and critical for us to tell our own story as we move on down the road. So I think the future is bright. I think it's we have to devote time to education. That is so critical and key today, and certainly to this whole idea of trade and the concept of trade. Again, the mission of the organization, the mission of the department is to enhance food security. That's so important. It's like your name, your good name. That's all you have when you come to the table and you want to leave it as a good name. We want to do the same with food, making sure that people have trust and confidence in the food that we produce here in the state. And thus, we have the regulatory side of our department. I'm so pleased and proud of the work that they do today and will continue to do in the future. And thank you for the support that you gave us for them. So I think it's a bright future down the road. I look forward to continuing in that capacity or this capacity. Again, thanks for the question.
Senator Kubley.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess pending further questions, I would move the confirmation of Commissioner Designate Fredrickson. And at the same time, I would point out in response to his question as to why that brought laughter, it was only his staff that was laughing.
Yes, I brought the whole, Mr. Chairman, Senator Kubley, I brought the whole group here today.
Right. So, Senator Stump, can you tell us any stories from years ago?
Well, Mr. Chairman, there's a lot of stories, but one thing that I would request is that you as commissioner keep your good sense of humor for this legislative body, and I think that goes a long ways. And I just looking over your track record, not only here in the Senate, but I think all of the other responsibilities that you had, I think that was probably a great tool for you to get there and make a successful career for yourself. So.
Thanks, Senator. Thank you.
Further questions of the commissioner? Well, you guys, I don't know. Good thing we had everything thought out beforehand, so we've got it worked out.
Can I put on my tombstone I was confirmed?
Commissioner,
we're gone to another meeting.
I want to thank you for stepping up. Not everybody wants to be involved in government nowadays.
At my age, yeah.
And especially your age. But you and I should know better when we get
there. That's right. That's right.
But anyway, I want to thank you, Commissioner, for stepping up. And thank you for your friendship all these years personally. And we look forward to having you move forward. So,
I was just wondering, is Schoenfeld still behind me?
No.
Oh, okay.
Watching carefully.
He was in the House. He didn't go in the Senate.
That's right.
We have a motion before us from Senator Kubley that we offer the Commissioner Fredrickson's name up as for confirmation to the full Senate. All those in favor of said motion signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Congratulations.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, members.
Thank you for your work.
I'll do my best.
I know you will. Thank you very much. Next, members, we have Senate File 1324. If no one objects, I would just as soon present it from the chair here because we were having people move back and forth to the witness table from the department. It's what I would call a miscellaneous bill from the department, basic policy issues that we've been working very hard on all this week. And so, again, we have several people here from the department wishing to talk to us about it. So I would place a motion before us that we move Senate file number 1324. I believe we'll I believe we can get to the floor with it, so our initial motion will be to go to the floor. So with that, do we have folks from the department to help us with the bill? Oh, that's right. We're doing the Senate File 1324A1 amendment. It's a delete all amendment that I've put together. So that's the document we'll be working on, and you have that in your packets today. So welcome, Ms. Gauthier from the department and others. We'll start walking through the bill, and why don't you just go through the sections and have your folks talk about them, and that'll save me from doing it all myself. So
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah. For the record, I'm Greta Gauthier, Department of Agriculture. Thank you for the opportunity to bring forward this bill. Thank you for authoring it, Senator Magnus. Yes, this is a technical bill, some policy changes, but mostly technical policy. And what I'd like to do, Mr. Chairman, is I have staff with the expert knowledge here and have them go through section by section explaining to the committee members what these provisions are and what the implications are.
Okay.
So with that, I'd like to start with Section 1, which has to do with agricultural pesticide sales invoices. I have Mr. Buzicki with me.
Okay. Welcome, Mr. Buzicki. First off, I think since I'm sitting up here, I should have probably one of the other members. Maybe Senator Saxhog, you would move the amended bill.
So moved.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Saxhog. We might as well go ahead and vote on the amendment because we pardon me. Yeah, we'll get the amendment in. We'll vote on the Senator Saxhog's motion to bring the bill before us. So all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. All right. Okay, we have the bill before us, Mr. Buzicki.
Okay, Mr. Chair, my name is Greg Buzicki. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Section 1 is a small provision. It's a technical amendment to address an invoice issue. The committee should be aware that 2 years ago we passed a fee increase, and as part of that fee increase, we are collecting pesticide fees, surcharges, from all of our dealers. The particular types of fees we collect are those on agricultural chemicals, which are designated on their label. And the compliance has been very good with our traditional agricultural retailers. It worked very well this past year. However, we did encounter a problem with some specialty pesticide dealers. These are people that sell pesticides not perhaps as a main part of their business, but certain numbers of agricultural pesticides they would handle. And what the problem we encountered is that in order to comply with the law, and the law is specifically lines 1.5 through 1.8, where they have to list the annual gross sales on their invoice, they had to do significant reprogramming of their computers, their programs, and so forth, and it just wasn't the cost. So they were saying in order to be in compliance with this provision, they would have to spend a great deal of money or just stop selling those types of products. So this provision allows an exemption from that provision. It does meet with the industry's desire to have the invoice indicate that the fees have been paid. And basically, it would allow for company to write to the commissioner, provide their justification for this exemption. They would have to do that on an annual basis. If it was approved by the commissioner, they would be listed on a website so everybody could see who they were, and they would be required to designate on their form the statement that you find on lines 1.2, 1.21, so that everybody, all their competitors, would be aware that the fees had been properly paid. So it is very simply an alternative way to be in compliance with the law and make sure that everybody knows that they paid the fee.
All right. I think what we'll do is ask if anyone, any members have any questions on this section. And some of these sections are kind of match up, so we won't have to do it by each section, but we'll ask questions now, and then we'll also ask if there's anyone in the audience that would care to testify, any testimony from the audience. All right, seeing none, we'll move along then. Ms. Goffier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The next provision falls under our plant protection division in the Department of Agriculture, and I have with me the director of that division, Mr. Geer Friso, to explain this next section 2.
Welcome, Mr. Friso.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Geer Friso. I'm the director of Plant Protection Division. And first off, I wanted to mention I appreciate having a boss that appreciates Swedish jokes. So good to have.
Well, but I don't know about the chairman, Mr. Friso.
Be careful. First one is Section 2, which is a technicality. Years ago, there was a tree care registry that was created in order to facilitate communication with tree care specialists so that we could alert people about certain regulatory actions or invasive plant pests or quarantines, such as with gypsy moth or emerald ash borer. And there was some confusion as to whether or not private businesses, utility companies specifically, were subject to this requirement, and we are simply clarifying that utilities and municipalities are also subject to it because we need to communicate with those folks as well.
Mr. Chairman, that section is kind of unto itself, and then the next few sections here are going to deal with exports.
Well, so. Anyone had questions on Section 2 then? And anyone from the audience wishing to testify? Okay. We'll go ahead and go to Section 3 then.
Mr. Chair, members, Section 3 deals with export certification fees. All countries in the world require inspections of commodities that they're verified as being free of various pests that are defined by the importing country. When the fee structure was set up, there was two levels, and the vast majority of export certificates we issue are the $75 fee for commodities valued at more than $250. We also included a smaller certificate basically for the private citizen, a very reduced fee for $25. But what has happened is many seed companies send out seed for research, and we can receive several hundred packets of seed that go to very odd countries all over the world, and it consumes an enormous amount of our time to do the research on what those requirements are. Sometimes those countries have long lists of organisms that we're not even sure if they're bacteria or fungi or whatever else. So, and this program is completely fee-based. There's no state funds or general funds in this program. We're simply asking for, in those situations where we have to utilize a great deal of extra staff time and resources, that we can basically recoup or recover those costs.
Okay, any comments from the committee or anyone from the audience care to comment? All right, Section 4 then.
All right, I'm going to do Section 4 and Section 5 are both very closely related. They just deal with our authority to issue certificates and permits for various plant products, whether it be exporting internationally or interstate. It clarifies that we can certify plant treatment processes. So some countries require that an official agency verify that, for example, a seed is treated properly or a fumigation has occurred or a kiln can reach certain temperatures. So we simply want to clarify that we have that authority. And then Section 5 is simply clarifying that if we issue a certificate or permit, that permit is not transferable to another location nor person.
Okay, any comments on Section 5? From the committee? Anyone from the audience? All right, we'll go to Section 6 then.
Mr. Chair, Section 6 and Section 7 are both similar. These are both provisions that are supported by the nursery industry, by both our advisory committee and also the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association, and basically it provides a incentive, if you will, if we find unlicensed nursery growers or dealers that they would be obligated to pay the full fee plus past year's fee in addition as an incentive.
And again, members, I have a letter from the Nursery Landscape Association supporting these changes. These are things that they've asked for, and they support these changes. So anything under Section 6 or 7, I think.
Yes.
Okay.
Ms. Gauthier?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Did you have a question?
Maybe number 7 we haven't talked about enough yet.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, that's the same thing, yeah. That should be all right.
Mr. Chairman, Section 6 would apply to stock growers, and then Section 7 applies to stock dealers. Okay. And again, these are both things the industry asked us for in order to level the playing field and make sure that everybody is – that certification is widespread, let's put it that way. There are some out there that are not being certified now, and the industry is interested in making sure that – that all their competitors, everyone, is playing by the same rules.
Okay, very good. Any questions on those sections? Okay, we'll move on to Section 8 then.
Right, both Section 8 and Section 9 are simply moving rules or rule requirements out of rule and into statute. We think that creates more visibility for the requirements, and again, this is supported by the nursery industry, and we're not changing any requirements for bald and burlapped nursery stock or the requirements of nursery stock collected from the wild, so the provisions are the same. It's just moving from rule to statute.
And Mr. Chairman, there was a question that came up on from Representative McNamara on the House side as to whether online 4.23 that and 4.24 that the types of moisture holding materials approved by the commissioner would include shrink wrap, and in fact they do. So this, in addition to bald and burlap nursery stock, that would also include the method of shrink wrap for preserving the moisture.
Okay, very good. Any comments from the committee or audience? Okay. And we'll go into vegetables and flowers then.
Right. Section 10 and 11 are, again, two very similar. One deals with vegetable seeds, and Section 11 is flower seeds, and it's basically allowing the use of a statement for small packets of seed that the labeler can may include either the number of seeds or the net weight, and we think it's appropriate flexibility, and it makes sense for the consumer as well.
Okay, that's pretty straightforward. Any questions from anyone about that? All right, we're doing pretty good here.
All right.
Mr. Chairman.
All right.
I think that brings us to Section 12, Mr. Chairman.
Yep.
And this was something that was brought to the department recently by the biofuels industry, wanting to place into statute a definition of biobutanol and a definition of biobutanol facility. So this would place those definitions. Our staff did research the language given to us by the industry, and we made a few changes, and we feel that these reflect the most accurate descriptions of biobutanol and biobutanol facility. And these will be going into Chapter 41A, and 0.105, and that is the next gen section of Chapter 41A. And if you, if anyone would so desire, we do have members of the industry here to speak to the amendment, whether that be the isobutanol industry, the corn growers, et cetera. So,
any comments from the committee, Senator Kelash?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just wondering. You have an awful lot of things listed here specifically, and I'm just and you also have other renewable resources, so it's kind of inclusive and then exclusive. Could you just give me an idea why the cheese whey or whatever is included and not just considered part of the regular? Or is there things that we're trying to limit that shouldn't be in there? I'm just curious on the definition.
Ms. Goth here.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Kelash, it's a very good question. And to answer that, I would like to ask the attorney representing one of the industry companies that is in this business come up and speak to that. And I also have department staff as well. But
it's basically, if I might toss in while you're coming up, sir, it's basically the language in the next-gen statutes from 41A that this is pretty much the language coming from that. So, but go ahead, sir.
Mr. Chair, my name is Todd Taylor. I'm an attorney with Fredrickson Byron. I represent Gevo, which is one of the prominent biobutanol companies that is actually building a facility in Luverne, Minnesota right now. Mr. Chair, Senator, let me address your question. The language here is modeled after Section 41A.10, which describes cellulosic biofuel development. And the language is not meant to be exclusive. At least from my understanding, Gevo and biobutanol, as the facility is designed to be run, is going to be run off of corn. But what it's designed to do is allow it to be inclusive for all different feedstocks that are agriculturally or forest-derived to allow us to deal with cellulosic feedstocks in the future. So whether it's cheese whey, stover, any other agricultural commodity, it's just designed to be as inclusive as possible.
Okay. I was just wondering why cheese whey was in this. Okay. Seems like a strange thing.
Mr. Chairman, we didn't want to leave the dairy industry out of anything.
That's right. We included forestry products, too, for the folks up north. Hopefully we got everything covered here. But again, the reason why we're putting this in is because we did not have biobutanol really specified in the next gen language, the statutes governing that. And as we progressed, because we didn't know what products to put in, we didn't know what technologies to do. We tried to stay all as neutral as we could as the technologies have developed, and thankfully now we'll have the first commercial butanol plant in the world in Minnesota here. So interesting things coming up, and we'll be appointing the next gen board pretty quickly. I've been talking to leadership about it and get that going, and we'll be ready to go. Commissioner, you and several other and other people are on the board, and so we'll get that ready to go, and we look forward to meeting with everyone else and working on the industry here. This $4 gasoline and over $4 diesel fuel is hurting, folks. We do what we can to help. So, okay, any other discussion on that area? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, Mr. Senators.
All right. Gary, are you doing the fees and
thank you, Mr.
Grains?
Chairman.
Yep. Yeah. Ms. Goth here?
The next few sections, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, are dealing with bonding for storage and banking of grain. These sections are still a bit of a work in progress. There are some there were some concerns that were raised to us from the other body, and we are working on those and working with some other stakeholders. But what we have here today represents the general philosophy changes that we're trying to make here, which we think will make it better for business, less reporting, and hopefully better protection for farmers. And with that, I don't know if you have the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Gothier, yes, we do. And members, we do have an amendment. If the audience cares to, we get copies for those folks, too. We have the A2 amendment dealing with the bonding language here in section 14. So do we have a member that would wish to offer the amendment?
I can offer, Mr. Chair. I move the A2 amendment.
Thank you, Senator Kubley. All those in favor of the A2 adoption of the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Okay, that amendment is adopted. Now, do all members have the information? We're getting another handout here, too. We'll just wait a minute until all this comes. This all fits together here, so.
When we get there, Mr. Chair, we should probably have an explanation on the repealers. There's quite a few.
Mr.
Chairman, I can do that.
Yeah, why don't you start with that, Mr. Knopf? We'll start with the repealers.
Mr. Chairman, I should probably explain the repealers. Basically, this deleted the repealer section that's in the amendment you have before you, and it adds in the grain inspection chapter. So all those 17B repealers are the grain inspection, the chapter of law. The state has not been in business of grain inspection for a number of years due to budget cuts in previous years. And so this repeals it. The other piece.
Not that there aren't grain inspections going on. It's just that the Department of Agriculture, Minnesota Department of Agriculture, is not doing them. There are folks contracted with the USDA to do that in our pork facilities and so on. Ms. Goth here.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I was just going to add something similar, that grain inspections are going on, and it's largely done by private companies now.
Mr. Cano.
And then, Mr. Chair, and then you'll see that on 1.16 of the amendment, the 232.24 subdivision 3, and then you'll see the rule provisions. Those were in the original delete all amendment, and in your packets you have copies of the statute or the subdivision that's being repealed and of all of the rules that are being repealed. It should have been in your packets. It starts out with it's a stapled version. Looking for mine right now. It says appendix on the front, and it's 232.24 subdivision 3, and then that's the one statute that was in the original delete everything amendment. And then you'll see after that, you'll see pages with the rules that are being deleted or repealed. Excuse me.
Okay, everyone, find that. We've asked council to put together a listing of the. Of what's repealed. We got quite a list here, so we asked to get that in front of the members so they can look at that to make our decision. So. Okay.
Mr. Chair,
Senator
I don't know
Nelson.
That I have a copy of those repealers.
Should look like this, Senator Nelson.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. I didn't want to go through them all. I have the statute book here and go through them all myself, so we asked to have this all for everyone. All right.
All right, Mr. Chairman,
On Section 14.
Section 14, Mr. Chairman. I think we're going to work from a handout that we just had distributed, and the front page says grain bonding legislation.
Mr. Chair, members, this program was relatively new to our division, and thanks to the efforts of the new supervisor, he really was looking for ways to streamline the process and make it work better for the industry and also for farmers. The current bonding system is based on a monthly report, and then bonds are set on that monthly report. So it's a rather intensive administrative program for the grain elevators that have to file with us monthly, and then the bonds are adjusted on a monthly basis. And the problem with that way of doing business is it's a reactive process. So you can, if you have a grain storage at a very high point 1 month and then it goes to a very low amount the next month, then you'll be way overbonded that following month, and then vice versa. So you can have a low month which sets a low bond and then a high storage, and then if something happened, there would be very little protection for that that grain. So if you look on page 6, on the handout, we did an example of the current situation, and we just made some hypothetical grain values there from January through December, where in November there was a high month of $850,000 of grain. And then on the second row, you'll see the required bonding amount based on the prior months. So in this example, during that high month in November, there would only be a $35,000 bond that would be required to protect that grain. When we discussed this with Representative Hamilton, he asked us about what's the monthly cost for that bond, and that was a very good question. Then we calculated out in consultation with some bond companies what that cost would be, so that third row indicates what the cost of the bond is for that elevator. And so you end up with an annual cost of about a little over $5,000 for the elevator using our example. On page 7, it is the original option that we had presented, and that was based on looking at the highest month's storage in the past year. So we're trying to get rid of the monthly reporting and go to an annual report looking at the past year's storage capacity. And by using the system we came up with there, it ended up with a very large bond amount. So it came up with a bond requirement of $225,000 for each month. So that offers much more protection than is needed over many, many months. And it also calculates out that the cost of the bond would be $22,000, which is a considerable increase. So we went back to the drawing board, and we came up with option B on page 8. And this instead utilizes averaging system of all the months over the course of the year. And what that results in is a $75,000 bond across all the months. So it covers most of the months fairly well. It's still short over the month of November, but still better than the current system. And the cost to the elevator is now about $7,500 for the entire year versus our $22,000, the previous proposal, and the $5,000, which is the current system. We do recognize it still is not a perfect system, that there are flaws, and we would like to we would hope that the legislature would accept this proposal, but then at the same time that the department work with the grain industry, and that we work on this some more and see if there's more refinements than we can do to improve not only the protection for farmers, but also be fair with the grain industry.
Ms. Gauthier?
Mr. Chairman, members, if I may. So just to be clear, on page 8, that example is what is reflected in the A2 amendment. Those are the refinements. And instead of going with basing the bonding amount on the peak month of the previous year, we'd say instead base it on an average of all the months of the previous year. Now, again, in the other body, there were some questions raised about, well, could you perhaps have it be more automatic, computer technology being what it is, and that we are completely open and would love to discuss how we could make that sort of thing work. But for the time being, and there have been some other ideas raised as well that might simplify the process, provide the benefits that the industry and the farmers need without the cost. But for now, the A2 amendment will greatly reduce the bureaucracy that the businesses have to deal with, and it will streamline it also in terms of our processing of the information from them and that sort of thing, which will help us save money. And then again, just to continue the story of what has happened with the budget reductions in our agency, this would have been under our old marketing division, but when we merged that with our development division, this item was moved over to plant protection. So it's a good thing. We get a chance to look at some of our programs with a fresh set of eyes and try to figure out maybe some refinements that could be made, and that's what we'd like to do over the interim as well.
Mr. Zelenka, would you care to come up and tell us your thoughts? Are you going to? Is this going to raise the price of grain for us and still protect us, or how are we going? If we're going to lower your costs, it should raise the price of grain that you pay me, shouldn't it?
Mr. Chairman, perhaps.
Okay.
All right. One of the factors to consider. For the record, my name is Bob Zelenka. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Grain and Feed Association. We represent the grain elevator and feed mill industry here in the state. Before I answer this, I'd like to follow up the Commissioner Fredrickson. His grandfather was on our board of directors from 1912 until 1953 and was president of our board from 1929 to 1935, I believe. So appreciate his involvement, his family's involvement in our association as well. The bill that we're talking about, and I see the amendment. We're more comfortable with the amendment. Problem I have with the whole thing is I didn't see this until yesterday, and so I haven't had an opportunity to really share this much with my board or my grain committee to really get some feedback about the changes that are being proposed here. I did have a conversation a few months ago with the department when I was at another meeting there, where they did talk about the possibility of pursuing this. But like I say, this is the first I've seen that. So it would, I guess, from our view, been helpful to have a little bit more time to take a look at this. But what I see in front of me here, I like the change to the annual average versus the peak. That does make more sense, and it is more acceptable to us in terms of setting the bond amounts. The fact that I believe the language on the submission of our financial statements is upon request, that's fine. We're doing it as a normal course of business right now, so that's not a big deal either. I guess if we had a bit more time, I think we do surety bonding as well through our agency. I'm a licensed agent with CNA Surety. Most of the bonds that we have are at the maximum, so aren't going through the process of increases and decreases in their bonds. They're at the maximum, which means they currently don't have to submit reports to the state, nor are we hassling with increases and decreases in riders. What this will do, if you take an average, I say in some cases it may reduce the bond that an elevator needs, so that premium that they do pay, that savings in premium perhaps could find its way to better prices for our customers, but it does reduce our overall costs. They were right on the assessment. A maximum bond does cost our members about $5,200 a year as the premium. That's pretty standard in the industry.
Well, in one of my concerns as we were working on this also was, protection for everyone involved. That's really what the bonding is for. But so I was concerned about that, the grain prices. Everyone realizes the commodity prices are high now, and so, a lot of folks can hit some higher levels here. And as I thought about this, too, a lot of the grain, if you're peaking in October and November here, a lot of that grain also, too, is sold ahead of time, so the elevators may have that on hand, but the producers, for example, would have most likely gotten paid for that. It's just that they're waiting to get the grain shipped out, and the financial transactions have been made for the most part. It's just that the inventory is there yet on site. So
right. Yeah. We have examinations by the state of Minnesota once, twice a year to verify that we have inventory on hand to cover the receipted obligations. Again, this just covers the receipted grain. The contract grain you talk about, we have required by law to maintain 90% of the value of the contracts outstanding in our facilities. And that's how contract grain is covered, but it's not covered by surety bonding. That's only for receipted grain. And the grain buyer bond is for if our members would issue insufficient funds and a check that would bounce. That's where that comes into play.
Yeah. Well, I did have concerns as these markets move around and folks are working on the Board of Trade and so on and trying to manage the risk. Sometimes you can get caught on the wrong side and it can really be painful. So we want to make sure everyone's protected, Mr. Zelenka, so we appreciate your help with this. I think as this goes along, I doubt whether the House and the Senate bill will be the same, will it? So we will have conference committee. And if you have any thoughts, Mr. Zelenka, we'll, as we go into move forward with this, you get more time to look at it. I'd appreciate you staying in touch with Representative Hamilton and I and others on this.
Yeah, I look forward to that.
Make sure we do things right.
Can do.
Can do. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, any further discussions on that section of the bonding? Good information to have, I think. Good information for all of us to have. Okay, Ms. Gauthier, we'll go on to, let's see. What section are we at here now? I think those basically covered.
Mr. Chairman, I believe we're at section 20 on page 12.
I think you're right. I think we're at section 20, bottom of page 12, and on to page 13 is the changes dealing with firewood.
Mr. Chair, members, this was necessitated by the arrival of emerald ash borer. Now we have three counties that are quarantined for emerald ash borer, and we have gypsy moth quarantines in Wisconsin that are very close to the Minnesota border. So that exclusion of 100 miles for labeling requirements makes it extremely difficult for us, for the department inspectors, to know whether or not it comes from an area that may potentially be infested. So we're simply asking to strike that 100-mile restriction and then require the origin of firewood be on all labels.
Okay. All right. Makes sense to everyone? Anyone in the audience care to comment? That also continues on basically to page 14, the top of page 14. So that's
correct, that's section for, one's 20, for bulk and one's for
20 and 21. So.
Mr. Chairman, just to clarify, section one of those sections, section 20 is for bulk sales, and section 21 is for packaged sales.
Okay, very good. And again, members, our amendment has changed this repealer here on the original bill. So that's changed to the language this council has put together for us. So any further discussion on the bill? Anyone wishing to testify on the bill? Okay, seeing none, I think I first want to thank the this time of the year our staff can get overwhelmed at times, and I want to thank especially our staff at the Senate Council and the fiscal staff for their help with this. It's a time of year when you folks put in a lot of hours. I know that, and I appreciate your help, and I appreciate you getting us the information on the repealers and what we're doing here. That's helpful a lot to me, and I think to the members also. So. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of sending 1324, House Senate File 1324 as amended to the floor, I think is will be our motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Okay, the bill carries, and that's it for today. And I will watch your emails and contacts, members. I don't plan any meetings right now, but we'll see what happens.